Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for May 3rd, 2011. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Thomas Mitchell of the University of Louisville School of Medicine. In a paper published in this week's issue, Mitchell's group reports on the mechanism by which a compound called monophosphorolipid A, or MLA, stimulates the immune system without triggering inflammation. MLA is a compound that's an ingredient in some vaccines, where it acts as an adjuvant, an immune system stimulator. It's a non-toxic derivative of a bacterial endotoxin called lipopolysaccharide, or LPS. Both MLA and LPS stimulate the immune system to mount a response, but unlike its parent compound, MLA is not toxic. The mechanism by which these two compounds elicit different responses has been partially elucidated, but it's not yet completely understood. In the current study, Mitchell's group looked into the molecular basis of why LPS induces inflammation, but MLA does not. First, Mitchell explained what LPS is and how it affects the immune system.
LPS is a cell wall component of gram-negative bacteria. It's got a kind of a greasy anchor that sits in the outer membrane, and then it has a kind of connector that then leads to a long string of sugar residues. So it's kind of a sugar coating for bacteria that helps protect them from the environment and helps keep their outer membrane intact. There's a lot of hydration that goes along with the sugar chain, so you end up with this slick coating over the bacterium, which is a function of its LPS coat. And over evolutionary time, our immune systems and that of many animals has evolved to recognize it immediately as a threat because its chemistry is distinct from that of our own cells. It's not in mammalian cells. So we have special sensing mechanisms that tell us immediately if LPS is encountered. And if it is, then it sets off a whole range of immune responses that go from immediate inflammation to starting to teach the immune system to adaptively respond to the infectious threat. So LPS can be purified, and it's been studied for a very long time, for decades and decades, as the source of the endotoxicity that comes with sepsis or bacteremia, infections of the blood, which make us sick because our bodies are overreacting to the LPS in the bacteria.
And what is MLA then? It's a derivative of LPS?
Right. MLA is, it's also more commonly known as MPL, is a slightly altered version of LPS. It lacks, first of all, the sugar side chain, the long string of sugar groups that go off from the top of it. And then it has one phosphate instead of up to three, so it's called monophosphoryl, and LPS usually has at least two to three, and then it still has the acyl chains.
Is MLA a naturally occurring product? Does the bacteria make it, or does it arise from LPS being broken down in the body, or is MLA a completely synthetic compound?
That's a great question, and it turns out to be somewhat complicated because of how it was first discovered. It was first made from LPS by chemical means. So initially, it was discovered through an intentional campaign of chemical alteration to see if you could make something that was safer to use to stimulate the immune system. Now, there are recognized to be a lot of naturally occurring monophosphoryl structures, particularly in our guts. That's mostly what our gut bacteria express. When they're living in our intestines and in our colon, they tend to be monophosphorylated, which may in fact be a way to trigger less of an immune response so that we can cohabitate together better. So there are certainly naturally occurring forms, and then some pathogens intentionally switch from the inflammatory LPS structure to a monophosphoryl form. The plague bug does this. Yersinia pestis can change the kind that it synthesizes to a monophosphoryl form and avoids some of the immune detection that would normally help clear it. And then finally, it's now the subject of chemical synthesis to make better and more precise synthetic forms that are ever better at keeping immunostimulatory capacity while getting rid of the inflammatory side effects that are damaging.
How does MLA stimulate the immune system? If it doesn't induce an inflammatory response, what does it do?
So it's recognized through the same receptor system that LPS is recognized through, which is an elaborate sequential set of proteins that many of our immune cells have. It's recognized by a family of receptors called the toll-like receptor family, which includes toll-like receptor 1, 2, 3, 4, and 4 is the LPS receptor with its partner MD2. So there is a specific binding pocket for MLA and for LPS, and specifically those fatty acid chains that hang off the diglucosamine head group sit into a kind of a pocket. It's a little bit like a pita pocket that's been cut in half, and the fatty acid chains are stuck into the bottom of the pocket, and that is MD2 bound by LPS or monophospholipid A. And out, sticking out of the top of it would be the two glucosamines with the phosphate groups that are highly charged. And then that is bound by the toll-like receptor 4 signaling member of that receptor system.
MLA is not as toxic as LPS. It doesn't induce the sort of inflammatory response that LPS induces. How does signaling downstream of the receptor differ between these two compounds?
In TLR4 signaling, there are adaptor proteins that must carry the signal that something has been bound on the outside into the cell, ultimately into the nucleus, to get different genes expressed to make the different immune defense mechanisms possible. So in the case of TLR4, there are two adapters. One is called MyD88 and one is called TRIF, and they branch off into different directions. There is some overlap, but there's also a set of distinct genes induced by each of those adapters. And what we think is happening, and what we published a few years ago in Science, is that LPS, as has been known for some time, is able to bind this endotoxin receptor system and activate both the MyD88 and the TRIF pathways to their full extent. With monophospholipid A, what seems to happen is that the structure can activate one of those two pathways pretty well, and the other one it activates quite poorly. So the one that is activated poorly is the MyD88 branch, which is known to many as a rapid response inflammatory branch of the toll-like receptor signaling system. So monophospholipid A, for reasons that we don't understand, poorly stimulates the adapter branch of the toll-like receptor 4 system. But it still stimulates the TRIF branch, which is a little bit slower, a little different intracellular pathway, and it leads to a different set of genes that happen to be better at priming adaptive immune responses that involve T cells and B cells that learn what kind of infection has been experienced. So the bottom line is that the loss of all of the MyD88 signaling, we think, is helping moderate the inflammatory outcome while retaining the immune stimulatory outcome that is helpful for adaptive immune response.
And that's the question you addressed in this paper.
Our starting point was also a what could have been a competing explanation for why monophospholipid A has such low toxicity. So the Nishijima group reported in 2006 that monophospholipid A can not affect secretion of the pro-inflammatory cytokine IL-1 beta. IL-1 is a really important immediate effector inflammatory cytokine. So they looked specifically to see if monophospholipid A could induce IL-1 expression and if it could cause IL-1 to flood out of the cells the way it normally does with LPS and co-activators. So what they found is that there's a specific failure to make this cytokine, IL-1, when MLA is used to stimulate, but not when LPS is used to stimulate. And they tracked that to a specific failure of cleavage of the pro-IL-1 precursor protein, all of which we also found. But the question became, is that failure to make IL-1 the cause for the TRIF bias signaling that monophospholipid A exhibits, or is the TRIF bias signaling the cause of the failure to make IL-1? And so my student, Chelsea Embry, set out to address that question. So the simple way to address that was to take IL-1 signaling out so that we could see if TRIF-biased signaling occurred even though IL-1 autocrine-paracrine signaling was not happening. And what Chelsea found was that there was still this very strong shift to the TRIF pathway. That is, the TRIF signaling branch was intact or largely intact, while the MyD88 remained weak. So that indicated to us that what came first was this different signaling, and that then the challenge became understanding why exactly did that pattern of signaling lead to a defect in IL-1 production.
What did you find?
What we found is that one of the important inflammasome components called NLRP3, which is required to form this giant structure in the cell to cleave and process IL-1, was held back when you didn't engage the MyD88 signaling branch effectively. So you assembled other components. You had the pro-IL-1, you had the caspase-1, you had the adaptor protein ASK. Everything else was made, including the precursor protein, but the last piece of the puzzle was not made because it was dependent on the MyD88 signaling branch. And so that explains why the TRIF bias pattern of monophospholipid A signaling failed to bring about inflammasome activation, because one of the components required for it to become active was never made to begin with.
These findings about how MLA functions, does that inform how we use MLA as an adjuvant, as an immune system stimulator?
It helps us understand why it is as safe to use as it has turned out to be. It is currently a component in an important new vaccine, Cervarix, against human papillomavirus, HPV, which causes cervical cancer. If it's made correctly, it is very safe and has these beneficial immunostimulatory properties. And GlaxoSmithKline is the only company right now that knows how to make it in its clinical grade form with all of the safety standards that are necessary to earn FDA approval for use. So it's helping us understand at a basic level why that effort was successful. The very, very low toxicity means that you can trigger the adaptive immune response, which is exactly what you need to do with vaccination, while avoiding most of the immediate inflammatory side effects. So it's the first proof of concept that use of this toll-like receptor system signaling family can be used in a clinically relevant setting. And there will probably be many more versions of toll-like receptor ligands that will be used as more and more of them are proved to be safe and effective.
MLA or other derivatives of LPS were originally identified to have this ability to increase the body's ability to find and destroy tumor cells. Is that something for which MLA could be used to prime the immune system, to help the immune system be ready to fight tumor cells?
It has been tested in that context. My suspicion is that probably there will need to be more surgically targeted ways to boost the immune response, because tumor is such a challenge. Our body has already accepted those cells as self. It's as if a tumor is viewed as a healthy organ by our immune system eventually, and so it becomes very hard to break the tolerance that our bodies have for that new growing organ. So it may be that it will take something with more oomph than monophospholipid A. But it has been tested in some context, I believe, in melanoma.
Thank you, Dr. Mitchell, for speaking with me.
You're welcome.
That was Thomas Mitchell, senior author of a research article published in the May 3rd issue of Science Signaling. That paper's by Embry and colleagues, and it's titled Mechanism of Impaired Inflammasome Priming by Monophosphorylipid A. And that concludes the Science Signaling Podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. The show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, advancing science, serving society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.